Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, a pre-4th of July toy department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. You got plans for the fireworks and all that tomorrow?
Uh-huh. I'm going to be in the City Beautiful, Chicago, Illinois.
Is that a real nickname, or did you just improvise the City Beautiful?
Hawk Harrelson says it sometimes. I've never heard anyone else say it.
Yeah, that sounds like a thing that Hawk Harrelson would have just made up.
It could be, but I enjoy it. It fits. It's a beautiful city. Sparkling gem of the Midwest. Anyway, I'm going home, see the family, pick up my girlfriend, move her out here. So it's a whole big thing.
How long are you going to be in the City Beautiful?
Just a few days, but then road trip back over the course of a few days.
Gotcha. Because, you know, mm-hmm. I am also going to be in Chicago on Friday and Saturday.
What?
Yeah.
Are you going to Radiohead?
I am going to Radiohead two nights.
Me too.
Holy crap.
We should hang out Friday night before the show.
Okay. That's pretty wild. Look at that. That was not a thing that we rehearsed. That we literally just found that out in the pod that we're going to be at the same place at the same time.
That's exciting. Yeah, me and my friend Tiffany. We'll meet you downtown somewhere.
All right. That sounds really good. All right. So, yeah, good for you. I'm personally going to be doing some grilling and some fireworks watching up on my roof on the city cold.
I believe last year, I want to say maybe it was 2 years ago, though, I did the 4th in Seattle with some friends and had a sort of rooftop barbecue situation. The nice thing about the rooftop barbecue for the fireworks is I'm sure it's like this there is in Minneapolis as well as it is in Seattle and or here in the Bay or in Chicago, which is you've got the main fireworks, but then there's, if you're high enough, there's a dozen other littler fireworks going on all over the general area.
Yeah, it's by far the best. It makes the fireworks last so much longer too.
Right? Yeah, you it's know, super cool.
Sort of staggered. I think it was the year before last where we also had thunderstorms in the middle of all this. So there was like Mother Nature like lighting up the sky at the same time.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've definitely in my Chicago youth saw some thunderstorm fireworks, and that is an unmatchable experience.
Yeah, so I hope you get that. It was perfect too, cuz it was it was thunder and lightning, but it wasn't actually raining yet, so it was like you were like, you know, getting
perfect.
Poured on. So it was
that's exactly what you want.
It was pretty amazing. And I've concocted a great plan that I have some chef friends, and a bunch of chef friends are coming over. So competent people will be manning the grill.
That is a very, very smart plan.
And I'll be in charge of booze.
Yeah. Do what you know.
Where is 4th of July on the list of holidays for you?
Two,
right after Thanksgiving?
Correct.
Yeah, I think we have the same list.
It's a good list.
Yeah. Christmas
Thanksgiving
3?
Thanksgiving has all
Oh, wait,
food.
You don't. Christmas isn't really on your list of holidays. Sorry.
But Hanukkah isn't that high on my list. You know, as a kid, I'm sure I would have said Hanukkah, but like these days, presents aren't a huge part of my life.
Yeah, me neither.
You know?
I'm more like the family. Everyone slows down. Like, kind of everyone has that day off. You know, you do like the movie thing.
It's a great time to go visit family and friends. It's a great meal. It's an excuse to sit around and be lazy and watch football, all that. And then the 4th of July is, baseball and grilling and heat, and that's enjoyable as well.
Yeah, and every so often you get a little World Cup in that mix, and we'll we'll jump into that a little bit later on in the show. We also, of course, have to reset the NBA, which did its own reset over the weekend.
Boogie Wonderland. I have so many boogie songs ready. Boogie Nights. Dun, 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 Boogie Nights.
You know, it's weird. Did you watch Brian Windhorst do that, like, throw a big bucket of water on the boogie segment on SportsCenter last night?
No. Why? What's he whining about?
It was like a big, it was like an everybody calm down. He's super hurt. Nobody wants him. We don't know if he's going to come back. Like,
you know what?
It's not that big a deal.
I'm glad he did that, actually. I thought you were going to say he made one of the dumb Warriors ruining the NBA comments. I think he's right. Look, I believe Boogie when he says nobody offered him anything.
Yeah.
I believe Woj when he says nobody offered Boogie anything. There's a reason. Achilles injuries are brutal. The odds of him being anything like DeMarcus Cousins this season at any point are pretty long. But here's what I'm thinking.
First I don't know about, all, like, you, like, okay, you know, if he comes back in January, February, yeah, he's not gonna be the DeMarcus Cousins we know, but by, like, April, May, I feel like that's not out of the question.
Historically speaking, even a younger guy who does make it back, it takes a full year of playing after you get back from the injury to really, I would say the 2019-20 season is when DeMarcus will be DeMarcus again. But here's the thing. DeMarcus, a little slow and out of shape, is still like, you know, a rich man's Vlade Divac or Arvydas Sabonis. Like, fine. So his athleticism might be diminished for the Warriors this year, but Zaza Pachulia's full athleticism is less than DeMarcus Cousins diminished.
Yeah.
So give me a slow DeMarcus Cousins setting screens, getting a couple of buckets in the post, rebounding. Great. Great. 20 minutes a game. Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah. And happy to be along for the ride also. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and rehab his image, because I said this on the radio last night. I have a habit of being on the air in the Bay Area when these things go down. I was on when the Niners signed Richard Sherman. I was on when LeBron went to LA. I was on when DeMarcus got signed. And I said this last night. He, in my mind, has really been miscast. And it's easy to say, well, he's been a malcontent everywhere. He's always had technical foul problems and blah, blah, blah. But here's the reality. DeMarcus Cousins started his career by attempting to be loyal to a city and franchise that did nothing but fail all around him.
Yeah.
while he did everything he could. He went to New Orleans where, sure, maybe he still had technical fouls, but when they figured it out about half a year into playing together, they were rolling. They looked like a playoff threat, and then he got hurt.
Yeah, I don't think malcontent would be a fair way to describe his stint in New Orleans. Like, there weren't really any problems in that regard.
Well, I agree, and yet you read the stories today, and it's like, you know, a number of teams had a no Cousins policy before the injury, mm-hmm. just because they don't like his attitude. And to me, that's an example of NBA GMs being clueless. Like, he's a competitive, intense guy. Yeah, he's gonna get some technical fouls. Yeah, but haven't we shown that guys like Rasheed Wallace and Draymond Green and Dennis Rodman over the years, that these guys, the great ones, the great crazy ones, can be crazy and still great?
Kevin Durant got a bunch of technical fouls this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly.
Yeah. I could care less about technical fouls or being unhappy in Sacramento.
Yeah. Like, it's Sacramento, man.
Yeah. I mean, we'll be saying the same thing about Marvin Bagley in 5 years.
I hope not. I hope the Kings can put something back together. But the reality of this situation is DeMarcus Cousins went to a team where there's no rush to come back. He can take his time rehabbing. They can work him in slowly when he does come back. If he retains any of his former skill, which you'd assume he will, he'll be a tremendous fit offensively. And with much less offensive responsibility, you know, you'd imagine he can contribute more on the defensive end. He's certainly physically capable of that. So it's a chance for him to show everybody, hey, put me in a good situation. I'm gonna be great.
Yeah.
And then get paid after the year. Or who knows? Maybe he decides he likes it. He's already made $80 million, and maybe he just wants to play for a couple of years and win titles with the Warriors. Who knows? But to me,
he's going to go get his money. But But it's going to win a title on the way. It'll be exactly. It'll be a good time. Speaking of good times, did you see the Enos Kanter tweet?
No, but he's always great on Twitter. What he said?
Said breaking Adam Silver is signed with the Warriors for the mid-level exception, and had a picture of Adam Silver like in the uniform.
That's funny.
It was pretty hilarious. Yeah,
that's funny stuff.
I didn't know he knew Photoshop.
Yeah, but all these people complaining. It's even dumber than the Durant complaints. Like, at least the Durant complaints involved a bizarre cap spike and like a very specific, fortunate set of circumstances allowing the Warriors to get the second best player or top three player in the league. But this is just a guy who nobody was interested in for a variety of reasons, and the Warriors are uniquely positioned to say, well, hell, if you'll play for our financial specifications, come on. Yeah. Let's do this.
Again, no offers means anybody could have taken a run in him. Anybody.
Exactly. So the complaining is, come on.
And it's also, just even at its basic level, it's like, if you're the Golden State Warriors, right, it's your job to be good at basketball, same as the other teams in the league. And the complaint is essentially like that they're too good at doing the job that they're supposed to be doing.
That's all it is, and that's why it's just bitterness, man. It's just bitterness and jealousy. And look, I'm a Bulls fan. Yeah, I cover the Warriors, but I wish it was the Bulls who were doing this. I mean, they did in the 90s, but still, I wish it was the Bulls doing this, and it upsets me on a personal level that it's not, but I'm able to separate that from the fact that the Warriors are just doing good jobs of their jobs.
Yeah, good for them. It's interesting, right, because I think we looked at this offseason in like the, you know, I don't know if the term earth shattering would apply, but we definitely figured like there was going to be like the sort of hard NBA reset and things were really going to change. And you look up now and most of it's done. Most of the key moves have been made, and we're pretty much in the same place that we were before. I mean, the Lakers have moved some, but the Lakers are not contenders in the West. Certainly not as presently composed.
The question is it over?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's the potential Kawhi move. That's the last piece.
Well, yeah, and there's some little things that could happen. Kevin Love could be traded. You know, there are other deals the Lakers could make for other, not Kawhi level, but other really good players around the league. You know.
Okay.
LeBron has historically.
Let me ask you this though. Right, the Warriors and the Rockets are currently 1-2 in the West, right? With a fairly large gap down to number three.
Did the Rockets officially get Capella back yet?
No, I guess that hasn't happened yet.
I mean, assuming that happens, it says Capella is meeting with the Lakers.
Yeah.
And I would not go so far as to say whichever of the Lakers or Rockets get Capella is number two, but I would say that if Capella goes to the Lakers, it significantly increases their standing and decreases the Rockets.
It lessens the gap for some for sure, but I
don't think people realize how much of the Rockets, pushing the Warriors was about their defense. And how big a part Capella plays in that, and the fact that right now
he didn't play a ton in the Warriors series.
No, but he's a part of that defense, yeah. and he's 24 years old and improving, and he's already an elite defender and finisher.
Yeah, he's a key player. I think the Rockets are going to wind up having him, but I think so too.
I'm just saying, if they don't, it hurts them a lot, and it would help the Lakers a lot because they really don't have that guy, a big defender like that right now.
But my point was Rockets 1-2 in the East, Celtics and Sixers are in the West rather. Celtics and Sixers number one and number two in the East, right? These are all things that we thought, you know, once we assumed LeBron was leaving town.
Yes.
That's what we
this
got.
This is about right. Yeah.
like you said,
the Kawhi deal is still out there. And you know, again, like there's some restricted free agents like Capella, Jabari Parker, who it seems like the Bucks may not want. Like, there are guys out there who may not be Kawhi or LeBron or, you know, names like that, but who can affect
Sure, teams are going to get better or worse. Like, free agency is not over, but I think it's we're talking a lot at the margins right now. We're talking a lot about the margins outside of Kawhi.
Hold on.
Kawhi's a game changer.
Think about how much the margins affect a team that has LeBron James.
Sure.
So, like, could the Lakers add pieces that you're not thinking about right now to catch up to the Rockets?
I don't think so, and here's why. They need about four shooters. They have zero. They currently have zero shooters, and they're not going to get four between now and the start of the season. They're just not.
Yeah, I mean, probably not. But again, like, the Rockets lost Trevor Ariza, who was part of that great defense.
Also not that good last year.
Not that good on offense, but again, the Rockets' offense is really just about James Harden and Chris Paul. So defensively, their defense was a huge part of what allowed them to be as good as they were all year long, and more specifically, to compete with the Warriors, which is the goal here. So as they lose chips from their defense, small as they may seem in the offseason, and I agree, I don't want to pay Trevor Ariza $15 million, but at the same time, he is a part of what made them successful. And so these are minor things, yes, but also Chris Paul's a year older. Also, the league is a year more accustomed to what they're doing in terms of all the ISO stuff. And LeBron's in LA. And remember what just happened with that wreckage around him in Cleveland. So he's already got a better roster in LA, in my mind, than he had in Cleveland. And I think that's, that's – you got to remember who we're talking about.
I guess. I mean, they made a lot of weird moves these last couple of days. Look, to me
– I don't think they did. All these moves are one-year deals.
Sure.
So they may be gambles, but they position them to make another big free agent signing next off.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm not saying they've screwed them long-term, but what I am saying is that the four-year deal and these kind of weird one-year moves –
Let me stop you just quickly. I finish that thought in a second. But in regards to the one-year moves, I talked to Eddie Johnson, the Suns TV guy. He's also a radio host on Sirius.
Former Supersonic?
NBA Sixth Man of the Year, 17-year career.
Yeah.
Anyway, he made the point that although there's some crazy guys, and yeah, they're not shooters, which is what you think you want around LeBron, and you do want. They're all guys to muck up the game defensively and get in the Warriors' faces and cause problems. And we just saw Rajon Rondo do that a month ago. We've seen Lance Stephenson do that when he's energized and engaged. So, yeah, they're a little weird, but they do make a certain sort of sense. And again, they're all one-year deals that give them flexibility next summer. So I think what the Lakers doing, they're obviously trying to get Kawhi Leonard now. But they're also setting up to sign him in free agency next summer if they can't get him now, and to be an interesting and competitive team this year. I would not sell them short if I were you.
I'm going to sell them short.
Okay.
To me, the contract that LeBron signed and sort of these weird moves signals to me that they're all viewing this as a long-term project and not particularly – particularly sold on them being a contender in 2018, 2019. Now, I think their future is bright.
There's no doubt that it's a long-term project.
Yeah.
You're right about that.
And I just don't think that they're expecting to be in that group of teams this year. I'm not saying that they can't make some noise, and clearly they'll be a playoff team.
Yeah.
But
LeBron, interestingly,
not contenders.
I think LeBron maybe did learn a little something from his time in Cleveland as far as the deal goes. Just in signing the four-year deal, or which is really three and an option, he says to the league, like, come on over here. I'm here for good.
Right. And it allows them to make some long-term decisions, do some things with youth, and they don't necessarily have to be mortgaging picks.
That was a problem for Cleveland the last couple of years, right, as he signed these one-and-one deals was, well, we got to make sure we're okay if and when he leaves, so we can't go too whole hog into surrounding him with the best possible talent.
I think he learned from that. I also think he probably doesn't want to put up with the
free
drama.
Agency every year?
Yeah.
That may be true.
So,
he may be sick of that.
Yeah. All right. Should we move on to the World Cup?
Sure.
Since we're in the sporting world. What, you know, as we sit, we're kind of halfway through the day's games. I had a bit of a dud this morning, but man,
I did not watch this morning.
What a delightful contest yesterday. with Japan and oh my God, I'm blanking. Don't get old, kids. An incredible game between Japan and Belgium. Right. And in this World Cup, you know, obviously we're on a bigger level than that, has been just a total delight.
I feel like most days there's been at least one pretty darn good match, which is that's great, man.
And oftentimes it's the match that you don't expect. Thinking about yesterday, right? Like I woke up excited for Brazil and Mexico, which was not bad at all.
No, it was good. Mexico hung in there for a long time.
But paled in comparison to the excitement that Belgium and Japan, which most people sort of expected to be a blowout, was going to provide. You know, when you look at, and I knew Belgium had been playing well. I didn't realize the run that they were on, that they not only were undefeated in qualifying for the World Cup and then so far in the World Cup, but they'd scored, I believe it's 52 goals over that period and surrendered 8.
Yeah.
So, like, they had just been destroying teams.
And when you watch, you get it. If you have even the vaguest, I mean, I'm not a international soccer expert by any means. I barely watch Champions and Premier League, and I don't watch any of the other European leagues. But I still recognize 80% of the Belgian starters' names just because they're that famous.
Yeah.
Like, the quantity of world-class international players on this Belgium team right now is remarkable.
Yeah, and it helps that for whatever reason, most of them are applying their trade in England. So if you watch Premier League, they're familiar names, but they're Premier League stars. You know, these are major contributors on big Champions League clubs. You know, and they...
I just pulled up the scoreboard and saw shocking news that I wonder if you know. About the game that is about to happen today.
Go ahead, hit me.
ESPN FC tweeting, James Rodriguez is unavailable for Colombia.
Yeah,
he's been listed as, quote, absent for their last 16 clash with England.
Absent is interesting. That part, I'd heard he wasn't going to play.
Maybe he's just hurt, but that's weird.
I don't know that this sinks Colombia.
No? They got some guys.
Yeah, they have players. He's their best player, but it's not a one man team.
England's been playing well though.
England
That'll
has
be fun today.
England has been obviously. Playing well, and you can see a path to the final for England, which is delightful in that they could make the final. But that's exactly how this is exactly the way that England fails sort of spectacularly. So so that's on the table too. It the narrative portion of the World Cup really kind of kicks in the knockout rounds, and it's really sort of. Delightful in that way.
Yeah, well, I was going to say in the quarterfinals, you can almost see a path to the finals for anyone because although the competition seems much better on one side of the bracket, all four teams are playing incredibly well. So there's sort of the better side of the bracket and perhaps the lesser side of the bracket, but both of them are wide open in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Because on the good side, you're sort of like, well, they're all good. Anyone could come
exactly.
out of here. And
yeah.
On the other side, you're like, well, they're all not that good, so anyone could come out of here.
Right. And frankly, that's a great setup because I don't mind a mismatched final. There's always a chance of an upset in international soccer.
I think whoever comes out of that Eastern Conference,
they're going to be favored.
Yeah,
but that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
No, right. There's going to be a favorite and an underdog, but the underdog is going to have enough quality, certainly, to win on that particular day. And that's also part of the beauty of soccer is,
it's hard to have such a gap that it's not conceivable.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the puncher's chance is always there. And the teams are all close enough in ability that if someone plays, you know, like Japan did, on their day, if they execute very highly, they can go toe to toe with anybody in the world, and that's what they did. They went out there and played like warriors, and had a couple great finishes. And you know, a few things go their way that they win that match. You know,
and Japan's a good example because all you really need is a hot – it's like hockey. A hot goalie and one scorer, and you got a shot.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, maybe a little smart strategery here and there.
Right.
But,
right.
To just kind of have this sort of avalanche of games like we've had with just two a day and tons of excitement and so much meaning – like this, this is as fun as sports gets, and just to kind of have it randomly thrown into the middle of what is nominally a pretty dead calendar time of the sports
it's
year.
It's perfect.
Yeah, it's so great.
Better for you, but even for me, reasonably well timed.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you get these sort of you have the games on the office during the day, or perfectly on the weekend. You know, Although I will say Saturday, I woke up at 8:30 or I got to the bar at 8:30 for the 9 o'clock game. So I made sure I got a spot because I knew it would be crowded as it was. But that means that I started drinking at 8:30 and had to keep that rolling all the way till the 3 o'clock games and then went about my day, which also involved drinking. And so that at some point I looked up and it was, 1:30 in the morning, and I'd been drinking since 8:30 in the morning, and that's not a good recipe.
No, that's a Sunday. Long day. I've done a few of those type of days, of course, with just football on the West Coast, because you get to the bar at 9:30 or something like that for a long day of NFL. But I heard I think it was Kevin Arnovitz, the ESPN reporter, talking on a podcast about how he's not even a big soccer fan, but because of the timing, every morning he's been getting up. And for the 7 a.m. game, he'll just go to, like, a local restaurant or bar of the nationality that's playing, one of the teams that's playing. So he's been to, like, a Colombian joint and a Mexican restaurant and, like, all these various – each game he chooses a different nationality's L.A. locale and goes and just hangs out with the diehard fans and watches. And it sounds like a blast, man. And then like you're done at 9 and off to work.
I heard that podcast. Shout out to the Low Post. And I have done that very thing in San Francisco. San Francisco is very amenable.
It's a great place for that.
To doing that. It's a little sad that the Italians are not in this World Cup because
North Beach is a good spot.
Like with some Italians is a phenomenal experience, and you can do the same thing with many of the countries involved. The Brazilians, by the way, Pizza Orgasmica is their joint, I highly recommend watching a Brazil match with the Brazilians at Pizza Orgasmica.
I have a roommate who's half Belgian, so I'm not sure we can venture into enemy territory for that.
Man, I can't wait for Brazil Belgium. That is
that should be phenomenal.
Yeah. All right. So we're fired up about the World Cup. And I dropped a little San Francisco local knowledge for those of you listening.
Good job. We got gone, but not forgotten.
That's right. all right. Let's jump into the worlds of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
You had 2 minutes that you wanted to do on Drake, right?
Oh, right. Okay.
Can I do 2 seconds on Drake first?
Sure.
Fuck Drake. Okay, your turn.
I'm sorry. Can we dig into that a little?
Yeah, sure. This is not something that we've talked about this on the.
But I mean, is that like an angry thing before, or just like an I don't care thing?
It's mostly an I don't care. I think he's overrated.
Okay. We pretty much agree.
We've covered that ground, and whatever, dude. Drop your 27 track opus, and
okay. Well, let me just say it's not only is 23 or 5 or whatever it is tracks ridiculous every year in the history of music, but especially in 2018. Also, 13 would have been stupid for this because there's not more than 7 good songs on it. And the best songs are the singles that have been out for months. And to subject people to hours of mediocre music. Well, I mean, I guess that's a description of Drake's career, but also it's like, why are you doing this? And in a way I don't get it at all. On the other hand, I guess I got to give Drake credit because he seems to own the music release cycle somehow, and there always is new Drake out, and people seem to love it, so whatever.
Yeah, I mean, basically, he's going to make a ton of money off of, he's basically dropping B-sides, right? It's like,
yeah,
it's six, I gave you the 7 singles, now here's the 16-track right. B-side album, but we're packaging it all as one, and it seems like it's an event.
Yeah, and it seems like he has a release every month or two, and I guess that's the way you do it, but I don't know why he bothers with albums.
Why do
you,
I mean, look, Drake is not good.
It's fine.
I don't know if it's good. Inarguable, but it's close to inarguable that he's the most popular rapper in the world right now, right? Just popular. I didn't say best.
No, I know. Yeah. Is he a rap? I mean, I guess. Yeah, I guess.
Why is this?
I don't know.
Like, if we all agree it's pretty mediocre, is it just that the hits provide real highs for people? I don't.
Maybe.
I mean, like, it's.
And look,
he's
I
got
actually,
a few hits that I enjoy, but it's never more than, like, yeah, all right. Kind of like that one.
I was actually semi excited for this album because I thought the singles were really good. You know, I thought Nice for What and God's Plan were both, like, two of his better rap songs, frankly. And I, you know, the reason I say, is he a rapper? He certainly raps. He feels like more of a pop artist who raps to me than a rapper.
Yeah, well,
or a hip hop artist.
It is interesting. A lot of his like biggest hits have much more of an R&B sort of feel than,
or both. That, you know, yeah. Sort of a combo flavor where he does both things, and he is talented in both arenas. So it's always been weird for me, a talented guy who I feel like just kind of mostly releases B-sides, and that's fine. But I'd rather wait 2 years for a 12-track album of fire then get, you know, 12 good tracks over that, you know, 3 or 4 year period with literally 100.
Yeah. I think we're gonna go Drake's whole life without getting something that's all fire and no eh.
No, I agree. If that was going to happen, I think it would have happened already, or at least with this album. And I'll just say the other thing is, like, any time Drake says anything that attempts to be, like, hard or gangster, my brain, I say aloud in my head, no, Aubrey.
I like that.
Like I say aloud in my head, like, I've seen your bar mitzvah photos.
All right, we've gone way over our allotted 2 minutes on Drake.
But like that stuff is really very silly to me. Like yeah. you were in a wheelchair on Degrassi. You are not a gangster.
Right. I'd much rather see you crushing on Doris Burke.
Yeah, exactly.
Do
be
that.
Funny,
be that
be
Drake.
Fun. Don't pretend to be something you're not.
Yeah, don't take it seriously, dude. Let's talk about something that I think we both kind of love, which is the new season of Glow. Dropped on Netflix on Friday. And, you know, I'm not sure that I realized about Glow was Jenji Cohen's involvement in it.
Mm-hmm.
Jenji Cohen is the, for those of you who don't know, the executive producer, showrunner on Orange is the New Black. She also did
Weeds.
And yeah.
She's like the fairy godmother of Glow because both of the creators were previous, like, writers under her on her previous shows.
Yeah, and I think you can feel like the Orange is the New Black vibe.
Yes, because they honor all the characters in a diverse and deep cast.
Yeah, it's fun to spend time in their world and just sort of slowly learn more about these people because every one of them is interesting. It has an interesting story. And I wonder, you know, obviously I don't think we're going to get that same sort of OINTB structure where like every episode is about a person. But when, you know, I think the standout episode for a lot of people was that fourth episode where Welfare Queen goes to Stanford. The mother of all matches where you really like, you see so much more about Welfare Queen in this way mm-hmm. that's really touching and really well done. And like that to me was the most emotionally winning of a lot of really good episodes this season.
No doubt. Although I will tell you, I once again cried like a baby through the last two episodes of the season. I basically, anytime Alison Brie acts emotion, I cry. It's this show, man, is just like this joyous. It's wrapping its arms around the complicated nature of humanity. It struck me as I was getting to the end of the season, and I won't spoil the end.
I've watched 8 of the 10 episodes so far,
and I finished it last night. But there's really not a protagonist or an antagonist on this show. There are some challenges, but there's not like a bad guy. And none of the people.
Well, except for Tom Grant, the network executive.
Yeah, he's like a bad person. You know, he's a bad space guy.
Yeah.
But he's not a capital B, capital G bad guy. Like.
He's definitely not an antagonist. You know what I mean?
Yeah, or exactly. Antagonist. That's what I'm saying. He comes in and he's a nasty person. But it's not like they're fighting against him in a meaningful way, broadly speaking. And, you know, I also, maybe more to the point, not a one of the potential protagonists is clearly a good person. They're all these complicated, flawed individuals who you fall in love with because of their humanity and God, all the acting is so good. Marc Maron is spectacular. Yeah. Alison Brie is spectacular. Is it Betty Gilpin?
Yep.
Is wonderful. And every single side character, you know, from Beirut to the cat lady to Welfare Queen, they all are treated like human beings and they all just knock their roles out of the park. It's so good and it feeds my heart so much in a nasty cultural time for a show about complicated but ultimately well-meaning, decent people to like honor humanity in its complicated nature.
Yeah, I that was very well said. And I think I'm also, you know, I just finished The Good Twin, which was it's not quite
another sort of bottle episode, right?
Yeah, it's a bottle-ish episode, I think it's fair to say.
It's sort of like an episode of the TV show Glow.
Yeah, it's sort of presented that way, basically, where you're watching the straight-to-airwave sort of version of it. And, like, the little vignettes are hilarious. And I think we talked about this last season, but did you watch Glow when it was on?
No.
I did, and I don't remember it being nearly this like that interesting. I do remember it being sort of that ridiculous, you know.
Yeah. Have you read anything about? Now it's funny because you stopped before the last two episodes, and as we were talking before the show, you were kind of like, "Yeah, I just started to realize it was going to be gone again when I finished it," and I had the same experience. I just couldn't wait as long. I blasted through the first 8 in the first 2 days and then took Sunday off before finishing it last night. But have you read anything about how they leave it?
I have not. I'm trying to avoid finding that out, I think.
Yeah. I'll just say that I don't believe they've officially renewed it, Netflix. Like, that's still technically up in the air. But they definitely they lay a very specific path for what happens next if it is picked up, which I would assume it will be.
It's interesting that, you know, I feel like whether or not it gets picked up would be an interesting, like, sort of work in wrestling parlance. You know what I mean?
I would truly be crushed if it wasn't picked up.
Yeah. No, I don't think they'd ever not pick it up. But in terms of, like, layering that sort of in, like, you know what I mean, in terms of the plot would be a very wrestling sort of thing to do. You know what I mean? Like.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm super excited about this show. I really enjoyed this season. I'm going to assume that it will go on. And I'll be excited to see where it goes from there, just because I want more time with these characters.
I just want – so this could I'll tell you right now, I could watch 200 episodes of this. It's phenomenal. I hope it goes on for 10 seasons. And by the way, nothing quite like a hot 30 minutes, man. The emotion and the excitement and the story lines and character development into a hot 30 minutes like this is amazing.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. And honestly, I hadn't even thought about that 30 minute thing until you brought it up. But it is a pleasure, and it makes it super bingeable.
for sure. It is as bingeable as anything that's been on. It's so damn good, man. It's so damn good, and I hope it goes forever. Fingers crossed. And I would like to, when you finish, presumably this week, we should do a quick check-in next week, if we do have an episode next week, about where they leave it.
All right, fair enough. We talked about the belt, sort of. In terms of,
it's so weird because it seems like every time we're ready to give something the belt, then it's gone again.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, is it's like these Netflix shows, they're sort of here and then they're around if they're around to you. You know what I mean? They're over if they're over to you. So it's hard to, like, you know, put them in that context. So I don't know if GLOW gets the belt because it's like, I don't know if it's on. But certainly of the shows we're talking about right now, I would say it's the best. If we're talking about shows that are presently running on TV in episodic form, you know, I mentioned this last week. But I think the show that I just enjoy watching the most is I'm Dying Up Here, which is a surprise to me. Like, we liked it and were sort of interested in it last season, but it's just kind of like, and some of it has to do with, I think there's less great things on. But
yes, right now, that what I was going to say is, like, right now that belt is like the ball at the balls at the beginning of a dodgeball game. Just like there's the belt is sitting at the center of the court and everyone's lined up on the baseline ready to run to it.
Yeah.
So, like, I am comfortable with you sort of putting I'm Dying up there in the lead for that chase. I think Succession is attempting to make an argument for it. And I think we're, you know, a month or two away from getting a whole bunch of other challengers back.
Yeah. I mean, in wrestling parlance, I sort of feel like it's like I'm Dying Up Here as the belt for me, but it's like the U.S. title. It's not, they're not the champions of the world. Yeah. It's the Intercontinental. It's like, they have the belt, but it's kind of a lesser belt. And when the heavyweights step in later on, you know, we know who the champ will be.
Right. But it's like whoever's holding the belt in Conor McGregor's division right now.
Yeah. But I will.
He hasn't fought at his own weight in 5 years or whatever.
I will say that I'm Dying Up Here has a really deep bench of really interesting, good characters. And I would say that, like, the comedy is legit funny in the show. Like, you know, did you watch? I'm guessing you probably didn't watch Studio 60.
No,
when that was on. You're not really a Sorkin guy, are you?
I'm not an anti Sorkin guy, and Studio 60 is one where, like, I think if it had gone on, I would have got into it. But I kind of don't want to torture myself.
No. I think that's fair.
Because I love Matthew Perry.
I would definitely say, if you're going back and if you love Matthew Perry and you're interested in Aaron Sorkin, that we're still trying to get you to watch The West Wing.
Matthew Perry's on The West Wing?
Yeah, he's you know, for a time. there's a lot of episodes of The West Wing. There's going to be a lot of people you love in The West Wing, for sure.
No, but I would add to what you said about I'm Dying Up Here that not only is the comedy, I assume you mean the stand-up on the show about stand-ups. Yeah, not only is the comedy, stand-up comedy, good, but also, like, this is a drama, essentially, primarily, but the comic relief. Like, Al Madrigal's character is basically just a goofy comic relief character, but he's excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all the little jokes that break up the sort of tough stuff that this show does deal with, all those little jokes and fun things are tremendous. It's just a really well-executed show. And by the way, Melissa Leo is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the whole cast, really, and a lot of them – are able to shift from being the comic relief or just the, like, hey, everyone's sitting around. Like, they're just in numerous sequences of just people sitting around breaking other comics balls that are delightful. And then they move on to something serious, you know?
Yeah. I think they did a really great job of casting, you know, of the, say, 10 comics, 5 of them are stand-up comics and 5 of them are talented young actors, you know?
And there's a lot of real comedy people involved. And I've noticed they like to give a lot of the random supporting roles to, like, old comics, you know?
Yes.
And so there's a lot of, like, interesting presence
Brad
of that
Garrett
on the stage.
There.
Oh, yeah, like Rick Overton, Dom Herrera.
I heard a funny story. I think it was on Mark Maron's podcast in, like, just one of the shorter, like, chatting with a friend things, where Dom Herrera apparently a lot of people, because he plays this sort of sick alcoholic on the show, people have, like, started worrying about his health. And so people keep being like, are you all right, man? And he's like, yeah, it's just a character. I'm doing fine.
Yeah, that's great. But, the reason I brought up Studio 60 is because it was a show set in, like, a Saturday Night Live world. And occasionally they'd have to do sketches on the show. And the sketches were always horrible. And it really, like, took you out of it. And so it's not an easy feat to, like, have guys get up there and do good stand-up, you know what I mean? Or interesting stand-up that makes the world go.
It's both. It's good stand-up and it's interesting stand-up. Like, and it feels like the sort of thought-provoking stuff that was probably happening at a place like, say, the Comedy Store in L.A. or the Comedy Cellar in New York back in that time. Quick hot take. Bad sketches is true to real-life Saturday Night Live.
Yes, but, like, there's a bad Saturday Night Live sketch bad and just the, like,
awful.
Yeah, like what, like, the, you know, somebody really trying to recreate. You know what I mean? Like when you watch somebody try to make a Saturday Night Live competitor, you know, and it's not working out. I'm talking, like, sub Mad TV kind of sketches. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that, it's a different kind of bad.
Maybe, but still.
All right, fair enough. So anyway, I recommend highly I'm Dying Up Here. I don't feel like it's a show that's getting a lot of buzz. I don't think I've ever heard anyone other than you mention it to me.
It's interesting. Showtime shows don't have the same cultural cachet as HBO or Netflix shows, it seems like.
Yeah, Billions accepted, really, I'd say, at this point. But
yeah, but even Billions, I feel like people don't have long conversations about what it really is. A lot of people are like, Billions is great and it's lots of fun, but, like, I don't think people are thinking too deeply about it, and I certainly don't think that's happening with this show. You know, I we like a lot of Showtime stuff right now.
Yeah. Per Wikipedia, I'm Dying Up Here is averaging about 150,000 viewers an episode, pretty much through the whole run. It's the ratings are up slightly, I would say, this year.
Well, that's good, because I think you're right. It's gotten better this year, and not unlike a show like Glow. It's much heavier than Glow, but not unlike a show like Glow, it does justice to a really deep roster of really interesting and good characters.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And not unlike Glow, it's centered by at least one, if not two, if you want to count Ari Grainer, tremendous female performances.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also think there's I guess the diversity is a little bit more on its sleeve. I'm Dying Up Here.
Yeah, the diversity in I'm Dying Up Here is really, like, we got these black guys to tell you a black story.
Yeah, and there's a couple of Mexican stories or you know.
But that's basically America in the 1970s,
right? Yeah, I feel like it's somewhat plot integral at that point. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You're going to have a lot more overt racism and opportunity or lack thereof, particularly in Hollywood in the 1970s, for sure.
No doubt. And I think they do a good job of dealing with those things.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's all pretty well handled.
His character is just excellent, and he's doing a tremendous job of playing, like, the subtle things that an African-American in his position has to think about at that time.
Yeah. Yeah, let's jump into Succession real quick.
Okay.
Since we talked about diversity, let's get into the problems of super white people.
Yeah, I know I can understand why it was a Freudian slip, but Succession, not Secession.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, sorry. Succession. Excuse me.
I can understand why Secession might be on the mind, but no, it's Succession.
Maybe we should make it. Someone's going to make the Secession show pretty soon.
Right.
But you're right. It is Succession. Yeah. Excuse me.
Hopefully it's not a documentary.
It's true. The circus is going to be Secession.
Yeah.
Anyway, that trip out of the toy department was necessary.
Brought to you by nobody.
I feel like the prince of Adam McKay. Is it McKay? McKay? I think it's McKay, right?
McKay, the Will Ferrell's guy?
Will Ferrell's guy. Are kind of all over this show. It reminds me a lot of The Big Short. You know, there's kind of this sort of verite, slow burn aspect of it. It does give you a feel like you're sort of in the room with these people as things are happening. You're just sort of slowly watching a lot of the agitas unspool between these people and and the various microaggressions build up into macroaggressions. And it's kind of a fun trip.
Yeah, and it's very ominous in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of waiting for additional shoes to drop, as it were. And I think that's sort of the hidden fun of this show. You know, other than Kieran Culkin, there's not a lot of fun on the face of this show. There's a lot of miserable people doing miserable things to other miserable people. But the fun to some degree is in the sort of like weird, ominous mood that's created by it. By this, like, that there's like this tension involved in the whole thing. And I think they're doing a really good job of building it.
Yeah. I do think, and you haven't seen the most recent episode, it's kind of the family gets together at Thanksgiving.
I'm very excited about that, though.
Yeah. That's an episode where some of those tensions are released. You know what I mean? People.
Yeah. I'm excited about that.
Yeah. People do some yelling at other people or just say some really mean things. Which is enjoyable and sort of the savageness of these people are enjoyable. And I feel like a lot of times where you have a show where there's not really anyone to root for, it's a problem. And I feel like that's sort of a benefit of the show. It's a feature, not a bug, that there's not really anyone to root for here.
Sometimes you just need a bunch of people to root against.
Yeah. Yeah. And this show provides them in spades. And I think
how long they're able to walk that wire of people that are fun to root against but also fun to watch will be interesting. But so far, so good.
Yeah, I agree. It's you know, you don't totally know where this thing is going yet, but very much along for the ride. I don't know that it feels like this is necessarily set up. It's already been renewed for a second season. But I don't know that this is like a seven seasons kind of a show.
No, I would agree. I'd say two or three is more what it feels like.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see how they decide to play that out.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of expect a finale where we zoom out on some new person having taken over the company kind of a thing and like on into the future. That's it.
Yeah, and then they have to screw the new person.
I can envision something like that within a couple seasons.
Yep. Then they unite, fight, and find out who is number one. All right. I want to go watch England. So should we do some homework and get the hell out of here?
Well, we never did Cloak and Dagger.
Oh, you're right. We didn't. We got to do Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about Cloak and Dagger real quick. We touched on it a little bit last week when we talked about Luke Cage. That I was enjoying Cloak and Dagger more. I feel like watching a few more episodes since then, I'm a little less feeling like, okay, I may have found a superhero show for me.
Darn it. I really hope the last episode would help hook you. I feel like it's I feel like this is a show that that of the superhero shows we've seen recently, it's up there with Jessica Jones in terms of superhero as a feature, not the center.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is definitely a show about people, you know, and me kind of complaining about Luke Cage and like that beginning scene where he's just like, are we really going to do this? And then watching him beat up 27 people.
It's not a video game trope.
Yeah, this is definitely people who have emotions and are trying to figure stuff out, which is more interesting to me. But it's almost so far in that direction. Like, it's just, and, you know, I understand because the audience is teens and stuff.
But
like,
don't you think the performances are really good? That's the thing I decided was really striking to me in the last couple episodes is just how good the performances are. It's a moderately compelling story, but to me, literally everyone on this show is just selling the hell out of it, from the cop to the random ex-convicts that they run into, to just to the kids, I think, are doing a phenomenal job, to the parents. Like, I'm kind of blown away by how good everyone is.
Yeah, see, I'm less blown away. I do think the bench is deep. I'm not 100% sold on the kids. And
okay.
I think I listened to that, the creator of the show on The Watch, and I do think it's a really hard show to cast. That's like finding the two right people for that. It's a difficult role. I don't know that the show is so emo, and I don't know that they are able to always hold up the material. And here's the other thing. Having Olivia Holt, who I'm not really exactly sure what her thing is, but she's like a pop star Disney person, right? I don't know the specifics of that. I probably should have looked it up.
She was a Disney kid.
Like, there's something that is too pretty about her for like the role she's playing. Like, this is a person who like lives in a flop house and does what I think is meth or coke or I don't know what it is.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I think
snorting hard drugs in a flop house, you know what I mean, half the time, and yet she always looks pretty and perfect, and it's like there's something just like not quite dark enough about her for me, for this character, that I find really off.
I can understand that position. I guess I would just say, I mean, it's still television.
Yes, I agree. And something like, you understand it's television, everyone's going to be a little bit prettier than they would be. But there's, to me, something, it's not just that she's pretty. It's like there's just something Disney princess about her presence.
Yeah,
that,
I mean,
that
I was
betrays the
her.
Type of character that she is. You know what I mean? I just
hear
looked it up.
You now that
she
you
was
say
she
it.
Was in, she was in the Disney, and I actually watched an episode of this at some point. I forget why. A series called Kickin' It, Disney show series called Kickin' It. So there you go.
I would love to know why it was that you watched an episode of Kickin' It.
I'll tell you that story off air. It's not that exciting. Okay. Anyway, look, she seems delightful, and I'm not saying she can't act. There's just something.
You don't think the other kid's really good?
There's something incongruous about that character. The other kid is a little bit better, but I don't know.
I mean, I buy her. I think he's excellent. I think the parents are both really good. I think the cop is wonderful. I'm very much in on the cast of this show, and I think that's why I'm so excited about what it might be.
The special effects, do they take you out of it a little bit?
I mean, there's...
That's a quibble, I grant you.
Yeah, there's not that much of them, frankly.
I don't know.
They're a
black
little cheesy,
smoke,
I guess, but we haven't totally even seen how that works. You know what I mean? Like, this is very much in the figuring out what the hell's going on stage.
Yes, and that's there is a lot of that. And that's the thing is, it's like, I understood, like, the first four episodes... you know, sort of an origin story, and it kind of develops a little slowly, and I was sort of okay with that. And I was kind of expecting it to lift off for me in episode 5, and I don't know.
That's the problem. Maybe I oversold episode 5 for you, but I
haven't had liftoff yet.
I hear everything you're saying, and I don't necessarily think you're wrong about any of it, but I would be hopeful that maybe you could still find a liftoff coming in this show, because I don't know. I really feel like it's certainly heading in a different direction than most of the superhero fare we've seen. And I think it might even be doing as good or better of a job of the sort of mixing a sort of standard teenage melodrama with previous IP. I think it's as good, if not better, than like a Riverdale or something.
Yeah, look,
like that.
I think the show is, you know, I don't have a reference because I don't watch Riverdale, but I think the show is trying to have a lot of balls up in the air, and it's a difficult task. So I'm not trying to hammer it. I am, you know, I understand I was nitpicking there a little bit, but I'm not trying to hammer it. I do think. You know, when we talked last week and I was, I don't know, 2.5 episodes in, you know, like I had a season pass to the show and I intended to use it. Like, I was very optimistic. And now I still have the season pass to the show, but I don't know if I'm going to be along for the whole ride. That's kind of where I'm at. And
I'm feeling like I'm going to cross my fingers that a few of them pile up on the DVR and some lazy Saturday you blast through a couple and you're like, you know what? This is pretty good.
Yeah, I could see it finding its stride. I could see it figuring out how to handle all those balls. And I don't think it's necessarily, if it drops one or two, it's not really a knock. Because like I said, I think it's trying to do some things very difficult. There are a lot of elements I like. I like the way that Louisiana and New Orleans is kind of a character.
Yeah,
and
they do a great job of making New Orleans a character.
Yeah, and I think it's, although it doesn't really necessarily seem like they're shooting there.
That's a good question.
I need to figure that out. But I do, and I do think there's some potential for that. Like I said, the show could grow into something good. I'm not 100% confident it's going to get there.
Yeah. Yeah, it does film in New Orleans.
All right, good for them.
Yeah, so we'll see.
yeah, nice job, Cloak and Dagger. And I'll tell you, like, I, you know, Freeform, yeah. not a channel I would go to. I'm now, you know, because I watch a lot of episodes on demand, I've been subjected to a lot of Freeform programming.
Yeah, they're getting their shots in.
The kids have some stuff. I'd probably check out Grownish if I really had nothing to do.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard good things.
I like Blackish quite a bit. It's not really a show we talk about a ton. Yeah.
Well, we've talked about your love for it. We've watched a couple episodes.
Yeah, Blackish is good. All right, let's do homework now because really we're like, I got some World Cup to watch.
Okay, so the only show that I'm aware of debuting is on HBO, Sharp Objects.
And what that is the is that the Amy Adams?
Yes,
kind of looks like a successor to Big Little Lies. I'm not sure actually has anything to do with Big Little Lies.
No, it's. I think it's probably closer to what's the Top of the Lake than.
I just sort of meant like the limited run series sort of deal. You know what I mean?
I think it is a limited run, but yeah, it's Amy Adams as a reporter who returns to her hometown to cover a murder case.
Yeah. You had me at Amy Adams. Like, I'll check that out.
Yeah, agreed. So episode one Sunday. So I think that's on the list for next week. Anything else jump to mind? We'll have presumably more World Cup and potentially more NBA to discuss.
It feels kind of like a dry time culturally a little bit. Maybe it's because
it
of the
there
holiday.
There's a lot of movies out.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is like, but I feel like there are a lot of movies out because it's the summer and people go to the movies, but I don't feel like there's necessarily a lot of movies people are like talking about.
Well,
are you feeling movie buzz?
I'll throw some things at you. Let me hear what you have to say.
Okay.
I'm assuming you're not particularly interested in Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, marginally interested in Ant-Man and the Wasp. Where it's, okay. You know what I mean? Like, if you told me, hey, there's a Paul Rudd, Michael Pena movie out in theaters.
Like,
yeah. I'd be like, yeah.
Oh, Evangeline Lilly too? Let's do this.
Right. But then you're like, oh, it's a Marvel movie. Then I'm, right. You know what I mean? It takes my notch down. You're not going to say Uncle Drew, are you?
Not now.
Okay.
What about Jurassic World? Okay. What about Incredibles 2?
Incredibles 2 I'd watch.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
What about Sicario 2? Everything is 2.
Sicario 2, you know, I was not one of those people that got super into the first Sicario. which is weird.
Cause I mean, I liked it.
It seems like the kind of thing that I would really like, and it just never really grabbed me.
Yeah, it was good, but it didn't grab me either.
So I'm sort of, I mean, kind of just meh about Sicario 2.
I didn't need a sequel.
It's one of those things where it definitely feels like a sequel should not exist. 100%.
Yeah. Here's the last one I'll throw at you for now. Tag.
Yeah.
Here's what I'll say. One or both of us will see one or more movies this week.
Okay.
And we'll give people reviews and tell them whether or not they should see those movies as well. I will be
Are we going to try to see the same? When is this going to happen? Like, we're both traveling.
I know. We're just going to have to communicate about it. Maybe we'll have a nice chat about it on Friday when we see each other in the beautiful city of Chicago. And we'll figure it out.
Yeah. And then we're going to see a bunch of shows, I would guess, between now and then, too. So maybe we can.
Well, we're both definitely seeing a Radiohead show. I guess you're probably seeing two of them. So,
yep. And then I got two shows tonight as well. Oops. Hopefully, I'm going to make at least some of both, and we'll share those experiences as well.
Okay, excellent. That all sounds good. And next week, I expect to be driving somewhere in the desert of Arizona when. We would normally record, so we're going to try to record with me driving in the desert of Arizona.
Yeah, we'll so hopefully we'll have a show, but it's possible we might not due to technical difficulties.
That's right. Technical stuff allowing, we will have a show next week.
All right, sounds good. Look forward to talking to them, man.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.